I'm Margot de Coatsworth. Welcome to our show today. Ask Margot, where I invite you to send in any questions you might have up your sleeve that are keeping you in a place in life where you don't want to be. I'm always focused on what it is that we want and not what we don't want. I think it's important that we stop looking at the things that aren't working and that don't work and chewing over them, ruminating over them, over and over. Isn't ruminating an interesting word, where animals chew their cud repeatedly? We have a tendency to do that. We think, that really narks me, that really annoys me, and we think about it some more. And as we do, it kind of sticks. I often say to both my clients and my friends, think of the thing you want and not the thing you don't want, because that's like a monkey on your back. You can pat that monkey, say, hold on tight. You can feed it. You can show it off. Look at this monkey that's on my back. Or you can say, that monkey is not me and I don't want it. It needs to drop off and find a tree. So if you have a monkey on your back, an issue, or even a person, something that's bothering you, don't feed its existence. Don't treat it like a pet. Don't make a pet of the thing you don't want. The extension of this is how you refer to something. My prickles go up all over when I hear someone say, my debilitating whatever it is, my illness, my cancer. Do you really want to call it that? I know this sounds harsh, but too bad. Listen to me, don't call it my if you don't want it, because it's not yours. You didn't choose it, you don't want it, so don't own it. Don't say my. Don't make it your identity. This thing that's attached itself to me must be dealt with, say to yourself. It's not mine. It doesn't belong. Do you see what I'm saying? Don't see yourself like that. Don't take on what you don't want that doesn't belong to you. Not just because you don't want it personally, but because we are not designed to carry stuff, to have stuff like that attached to us, and to allow it to integrate into our lives. We don't want to own it or identify with it. Please don't think I'm being insensitive to people who are dealing with vile and awful health issues. I'm not. But we've got to step back from the things in our lives that are unwanted and say, I'm going to look at that thing differently. I'm no longer going to identify with it as a part of me, even if it's already infused itself into me. I'm going to hold it apart from me in my mind and in my words and in my belief. Because if we don't believe in more for ourselves, who will do that? Nobody. There isn't anybody. We're in charge of ourselves. You are the genie in your life. You are the person in your life who has to say, I'm in control, even if you don't feel it. It's the starting point and it's a turning point. It's putting a stake in the ground for your right to be in charge of your life, to direct it in a way that you choose, and not to be on the receiving end of something that feels random. Something outside of you that's decided, I'm arriving in your life. No, just say no and keep saying that. Hold to it. Focus on what you want and not what you don't. I often hear people say, I'm fighting this. Oh, I don't know about that. Don't fight it. Just refocus yourself. You don't need to fight something that is less than you. This is a big subject, I know, and it's a tricky one to get your head around. But what is there to be lost if you try a different perspective, if you take back some of your own power, if you try to see yourself as a decider and not a recipient of random junk that shows up in life? Because if we don't do things differently, how will we expect a different result? If what we're doing isn't working, we need to stop doing that thing and do a new thing that has the power to create change for us. Right, onto our questions. Our first one today is from Jim. He says, I'd like to believe in God, but I just can't. I see too much that I can't reconcile. Judgment, hypocrisy, the state of the world. I don't understand it. I want to believe, but I just can't. How can a person get past that? Thank you for that, Jim. You are certainly not alone in this. Many thoughtful, intelligent people arrive at exactly this point, not because they're closed-minded, but maybe because they're paying attention only to what they immediately see. They're looking at the world as it appears. They're observing behavior, often poor behavior, carried out in the name of belief. They're noticing inconsistency, contradiction, and what seems like unanswered prayer. And they quite reasonably say, this doesn't add up. So let's begin by separating a few things, because this is where clarity starts. First of all, people are not God. What you see in the world, the judgment, the hypocrisy, the behavior that doesn't sit well, that is human behavior. That is not evidence against God. That is evidence of how people behave, often without understanding, often without alignment, sometimes using belief as a label rather than living it as a principle. So if your resistance is based on what you see people doing, it may be helpful to step back and say, I'm not evaluating God here, I'm evaluating people. And those are not the same thing. Secondly, the state of the world. Yes, there is disorder, there's conflict, there are things that are seemingly impossible to reconcile. But the question becomes, what is the design? Are we in a world where everything is controlled for us, or are we in a world where we have agency, where human beings can choose, act, build, and unfortunately also damage? Because if we are given that agency, then what we are seeing is not the failure of God. It's the result of how that agency is being used. So this brings us to something very important, the distinction between God's role and our role. And this is often misunderstood. Many people are looking for God to do the things that are in fact ours to do, to fix situations, to change outcomes, to intervene in ways that bypass human action, make people change their mind, behave as we want, even to make them fall in love with us sometimes. But if we go back to what we spoke about earlier, there is a design in this. God's role is guidance, to provide direction, to bring insight, to offer the next step, to create alignment and connection. And our role is action, to respond, to move, to choose, to act on what is shown. And when those two are working together, things begin to make sense. But when we expect one to do the work of the other, there is a disconnect. So let's come to belief itself. You said, I want to believe, but I can't. So let's remove the pressure from that. Belief is not something you force, it's something you explore. What if, instead of trying to believe in a fully formed idea of God, one that may have been shaped by other people, by institutions, by experiences you don't agree with, you begin with something much simpler? What if you ask, is there something beyond me that can give me some pointers? Not control you, not judge you, but maybe guide you. And then, rather than debating it intellectually, you test it practically. You become attentive. Do I get insights, you ask yourself? Do I notice nudges? Do I see connections forming when I act? Do things line up when I move in a certain direction? Do you feel little sparks of joy sometimes? The devil does not send sparks of joy, so those are from God. You don't have to resolve everything also at once. You don't have to reconcile every question immediately. You can begin with openness, with observation, and with a willingness to see whether there is something more. then just allow your understanding to form from that, because the aim is not to adopt someone else's belief system. The aim is to develop your own understanding, one that is grounded in what you recognize, experience, and work with. So maybe the question is not, how do I force myself to believe, but am I willing to explore this differently without the assumptions that have been put in front of me? I think personally we have to stop judging God and start looking at ourselves. Hope that helps. Also, if you're somewhere and you can't make a big leap to the other end of belief, then just ease yourself along a little bit. From someone who thinks there's no God to someone who thinks, well, if there was a God, this might be a possibility, or this might be worth considering. Just easing yourself into a place of openness where you can see that more may be available. That's how you move out of a place you're stuck in, step by step. If you want change, you have to participate in that change. Our next question. Margot, what do you think when someone in a relationship says you're too much? Too emotional, too energetic, too opinionated, too enthusiastic, too full on. Is that something we should try to change about ourselves? Being told you're too much in a romantic relationship can be very discouraging. I would look closely at that one, because you often hear what's underneath being be less, shrink a bit, tone yourself down, contain yourself. And of course, there are situations where some self-awareness is needed. If someone dominates every conversation, talks endlessly without listening, or overwhelms every room they walk into, then yes, there's something to adjust. That's maturity and it's social consideration. But very often, what's being called too much is simply the strongest and most alive part of a person. Too enthusiastic, too expressive, too thoughtful, too ambitious, too energetic. And rather than looking at that immediately as a flaw, I think it's worth asking a different question. Am I actually too much, or are we simply not resonant with each other? I love that word, resonance, because I think relationships are much more like music than people realize. When two musical notes resonate properly, there's harmony. Not sameness, but harmony. One note does not have to become the other note. They do not have to mirror each other perfectly. In fact, harmony often comes from complementary notes, not identical ones. One person may be calm and grounded, the other may be energetic and expressive. One may be strategic, the other more spontaneous. But together they create something balanced and beautiful because they're in tune with each other. That to me is what we should be looking for in a romantic relationship, not someone who suppresses or wants us to be smaller, but someone with whom we harmonize. Because if somebody repeatedly makes you feel that your natural way of being is too much, eventually you begin questioning yourself. You start editing your personality. You become careful, less spontaneous, less open. And over time, that's quite exhausting. So perhaps the issue is not, am I too much? Perhaps the issue is, this person doesn't resonate with me. And that's much less damaging because it does not require you to diminish yourself as a unique human being. It simply acknowledges a mismatch. Not everybody is meant to harmonize with everybody else. Some people bring out your best qualities naturally. Others make you feel wrong for having them at all. So your task in relationships is not to become universally acceptable. It's to remain aware enough to recognize where there is genuine harmony and where there is not. Because when you meet someone who truly resonates with you, that's often the beginning of a beautiful relationship, either friendship or romantically. Then your enthusiasm is no longer too much. Your depth is no longer too intense. Your energy is no longer too full on. It becomes attractive, enlivening, inspiring, complimentary. You feel received and accepted instead of corrected. So the next time someone says you're too much, pause before taking that on as an identity. It may be that they are just too little for you. I need to say one other thing here because it's so important when you're with a group of people and a little voice, either yours or someone else's, might say to you, you're being too loud or too much or too dominant or too controversial for these people to cope with. So don't just continue. Read the room. Sometimes when I see somebody who is behaving in such a way, I look around the room and I think if you looked at these people's faces, you would see that what you're delivering is not resonating. And you need to consider that it's not just about you. You need to realize that they aren't participating. So look at your audience, read their responses, and then you'll know whether you are in a conversation or whether you are just delivering your own little speech on your own platform. I see a bit too much of this, and I think we need to consider each other a bit more. Our next question is from Jack. Margot, what if our life is actually reflecting the standard we secretly accept, not the standard we talk about publicly, but the one we truly tolerate underneath? Interesting. I think there's quite a bit of truth in that because people will often tell you what they want, but if you look carefully at their life, you begin to see that what they're actually accepting is something different. Someone might say, I want a loving relationship, but they continue accepting inconsistency, poor communication, emotional unavailability, and disrespect. Some may say, I want success, but they continue accepting procrastination, chaos, lateness, and low standards in their own behavior. Someone might say, I want perfect health, but they continue accepting the opposite of that and constant criticism of their body and their habits that move them further away from being well. So at some point we have to ask ourselves, what standard am I actually living by? Not the one you post or about or talk about or aspire to, or the one you repeatedly tolerate, because your tolerated standard is often your real standard. It's a bit scary. And life organizes itself around that. That's why people can become very confused. They say, I don't understand why this is still happening. But the deeper question is, what am I continuing to permit, excuse or normalize? Because every time you tolerate something, you teach yourself, this is acceptable, this is allowed, this is what I expect. And expectation is so powerful. It shapes behavior, decisions, and outcomes. It's not about perfection. Nobody gets it right every time. It's just about awareness. Because the moment you become conscious of what you're accepting, you take back the ability to change it. You can say, no, actually, this is beneath the standard I want for my life. And that applies everywhere to relationships, money, health, friendships, environment, work, and self-respect, which I often call self-perception, because we often feel we do have self-respect and we dismiss the whole conversation, even though it might be something we need to address. But if we call it self-perception, then we are asking ourselves, how do I see myself? The interesting thing is that raising your standard does not always begin with adding something. It sometimes begins with removing something, a behavior, a person, a habit, a way of speaking to yourself. And once that standard shifts internally, your decisions begin shifting with it. You stop negotiating with things that diminish you. You stop settling for what you know does not truly align with the life you say you want. So if someone feels stuck, disappointed, or frustrated by repeated patterns in their life, I think one of the most useful questions they can ask themselves is, what am I secretly accepting that no longer matches the life I say I want? Because your life is often not reflecting your wishes, it's reflecting your standards. And when your standards rise genuinely, not performatively, but truly, then your life begins to rise to meet them. I hope that helps. Our last question today is, what happens when a person no longer trusts themselves, when they second guess everything, overthink decisions, and feel disconnected from their own judgment? I think this is a very real problem. When a person no longer trusts themselves, they become very vulnerable to confusion, because once self-trust weakens, almost everything becomes harder. Decisions take longer, fear grows louder, outside opinions become overly influential, and people often start looking everywhere else for certainty. They ask, "What do you think? What would you do? Do you think this is right?" over and over again. Not because they're foolish, but because somewhere along the line they stopped believing in their own internal guidance and that it was reliable. This can happen for many reasons. Sometimes they were criticized heavily. Sometimes they made painful mistakes and lost confidence in themselves. Sometimes they spent years around people who dismissed or overrode their instincts. Such a shame. And sometimes they simply got into the habit of disconnecting from themselves. The interesting thing is that once a person stops trusting themselves, they often stop acting decisively as well. And then something unfortunate happens. Because they hesitate so much, opportunities pass, outcomes weaken, and life becomes messier, which then proves to them that they can't trust themselves. So a loop begins. But self-trust is not the same thing as believing you will never make mistakes. That's impossible. Self-trust is the belief that even if I make a mistake, I can deal with it, learn from it, and move forward. That's very different, because people who trust themselves are not necessarily always right. They're simply willing to move. A lot of overthinking comes from trying to guarantee certainty before action. But life doesn't work like that. So how do we rebuild self-trust? It's not always easy, but you begin it in small steps, keeping promises to yourself. You stop saying, "I'll do that tomorrow," and then not doing it. You stop constantly abandoning your own decisions. You listen more carefully to your reactions, your instincts, and your responses instead of immediately dismissing them. And very importantly, you stop treating every mistake as evidence that you are incapable. Because mistakes are part of our learning. They're not proof that we should hand our authority over to someone else. I also think people need to be careful about becoming addicted to advice. There's nothing wrong with wisdom, guidance, mentoring, or support. But if every decision requires 10 opinions before you move, you slowly teach yourself, "My own judgment is not enough." And that's dangerous over time. At some point, you have to reclaim your position as the decision maker in your own life. Because if you don't trust yourself, eventually you begin living according to everybody else's thinking instead of your own. And that creates a very disconnected life. We were not designed for it. So if you feel you've lost self-trust, start small, move more, stop demanding perfection before action, and begin proving to yourself through consistent decisions and follow-through that you are more than capable of directing your own life. Because self-trust is not recovered through thinking about it endlessly. It's rebuilt through action and a little bit of faith. Well, that was our last question for today. Thank you for joining me on Ask Margot. And if you have questions that you would like us to address on the show, please do send them in either to admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz or to me under the contact tab at margotunlimited.com, Margot with a T. Don't forget, if you want some divine insight into your life, try the Word app. where you can get direction and answers to your questions from the superconscious, from the universe, from God. I think it's amazing, really, that technology and superconscious insight can work together in such a way. We're going to finish, as always, with the word, our message from the universe. This is a longish one, but it's very special, I think, because it gives you a clear picture of what's possible for us. Here we go. You are never excluded from my plan for good. You are never excluded from the best. That is my intention for you. That is my plan for you. It's a plan for good, and it's a plan for the best. I cannot fulfill a dream you do not have. I cannot meet you in a high place you are not going yourself. I cannot walk for you. I cannot stand for you. I cannot speak for you. You must do all those things for you and for me. Because remember, we are a team. Not you plus me, but we. You must always remember that. That is where your surety lies. That is where your confidence must be. That is where your future unfolds. It's like a card that is three-dimensional, flat when you look at it, but when you open it, a world opens up inside, stands up in that moment. That's exactly how it will be for you. You are holding that card and it looks flat. In a moment, it will open and you will see the world you and I have created. It will stand up for all to see. Thank you for joining me. See you next time.
This program was produced at and first aired on Coast Access Radio, supported by Erirangi Te Motu, New Zealand On Air. Stay up to date with the latest episodes, available on Spotify, iHeart, and Apple Podcasts.